Okay. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been a real pleasure coming up here. I love this room. You know, I just love being with alcoholics. I love, well, not only alcoholics. You know, I was at church last night. I had to skip my usual Wednesday meetings because I had some duties at church, and I was hanging around with people that are don't necessarily have a chip in their pocket. And one of the wonderful things that it says in our big book, it says God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. And what I never realized is that I crave not only a relationship with God. I mean, that it works so much better than alcohol, but I crave spiritual fellowship. Fellowship with people that are seeking the same thing I am, a connection with God. And it could be in an AA room, it could be out there on the street, it could be sitting at a bookstore, or it could be a church. I can actually hang out at church and talk to people that never had a drinking problem and just feel just as comfortable there. Isn't that weird? When I first came in here, it was 31 years ago when I got sober and I first came in here, I'd never hang around with them people, those earth people, those holier than thou people, and they're just people. And they're really not that much different than some of the AAers I hang around with today that are looking for the same thing I'm looking for. And I want to share a few experiences I have with the 12 step. There's different aspects of the 12 step. I just feel like sharing stuff having to do with working with others. The theme of the 12 step is the joy of living. And I get a great deal of joy out of sponsoring people and working with others and doing a lot of stuff along that line. So what you might call service stuff. And somebody was telling me the other day, the guys that hang out with me, the guys that I hang with, one of the guys was talking to me about the amount of stuff I do, and I said, I don't even think of it as doing it. It's just everybody's got to do something, and I just do this stuff. You know what I mean? Everybody's somewhere doing something. I just happen to be here doing this, and I don't think of it as anything extra or different. And I just want to share a little bit, of particulars. Now, after 31 years of doing this, there's no way I can compact all the great stories, and I have some stories that comes from hanging around alcoholics for 31 years and dealing with them. I want to tell you something. I don't really watch much TV, and I don't watch all the, they have a lot of these situation comedies, these things that are pop. What's a popular situation comedy on TV today?
Two and a Half Men,
okay? What's another one that somebody watches?
Desperate Housewives.
What is that? Who said that? Some guy said that? Desperate Housewives. Yeah, and what's the other one? 30 Rock. I mean, I got to tell you something. You guys understand this is just my opinion, don't you? You don't have to buy into anything I say. I'm just telling you my opinion. This is my experience, strength, and hope. I'm just going to tell you the deal, okay? I don't know why anybody would spend any time watching that stuff on TV when you've got alcoholics. When you got now I understand. Now I want to tell you something. I honestly appreciate how for the first 5 years for sure, and maybe the first 10 years, and maybe the first 15 years, when you're the guy in the barrel, when you're the guy that they're all laughing at. You understand what I'm saying? And your life has come to an end. You feel like killing yourself. What's the use of living? You can't go on anymore. And you're telling people this, and they're like giggling and stuff like that, and you're embarrassed, and they're humiliating you because they just don't understand how terrible life really is. I can understand when you're in that situation, okay, how it may not seem like that much fun. But you want to really hang around until you get out of the barrel. You understand what I'm saying? Because on the other end, it's a blast. I mean, this place is better than any. This is like the greatest reality TV program you've ever seen. I want to share with you some stuff that's happened to me. I'm going to read a couple things, though, out of the big book and Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, because that way at least you'll get something. It'll be like considered an actual AA meeting instead of stuff I'm talking about. So I've just picked a couple of excerpts, which may or may not have something to do with Step 12, but I think they're kind of neat. And some of these things you've heard and some of these things you maybe haven't heard. Now, this is from You know, there's so much stuff you could read. You know, if I really start going to this, I'd be reading the whole hour. But this is from Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, a book that you all really need to read. This is on page 143. And there was a guy named Clarence S., Clarence Snyder, who's called the Brewmaster. He's one of the first 100. Major guy. Started at AA in Cleveland. As a matter of fact, I think sometime a few years after Bill Wilson died, he took credit for actually starting AA. And maybe it's true. I don't know. But in any event, he was very well known in AA. And in the book, this is how he was 12-stepped by Dr. Bob in Akron. This is how he was 12-stepped by Dr. Bob in Akron. I want to read this to you, okay? This is on page 143. And I'm leaving out some really cool stuff, but I'm shortening this thing up. It says, I think he's in a hospital room or something like that. A lot of these guys got to the hospital. They were like, you know, they're really end-of-the-road drunks. He says, he remembered Paul S. coming in and eating his breakfast, then coming in and eating his lunch. I couldn't eat, said Clarence. So Clarence is lying there. He was a young guy, in his 20s, I think. And then he says, Doc Smith, that's Bob Smith, you know, our co-founder, came in later and took over. Now remember, this is they're 12-stepping this guy, what we would call 12-stepping. Although at the time they didn't have the big book, so it wasn't called 12-step. They were just, you know, going after this guy. He says, he sat on the edge of my bed and said, well, what do you think of all this? Then he paused and looked at me doubtfully. I don't know if you're ready yet. You're kind of young. Then Clarence says, I was down to 135 pounds, no job, no clothes, and no money. I didn't know how much more ready I could be, recalled Clarence. Still, I had to convince them I was ready. Then he asked, I want you to think about the dynamics here. I had to convince them that I was ready. They didn't want to waste time with people. They didn't suffer fools. They didn't want to waste that. They loved people. They wanted to help them. But, you know, but the fact of the matter is they were looking for people who were serious about this thing. He says, I had to convince them I was ready. Then he asked, Bob Smith asked, this is the first thing he asked them, do you believe in God, young fella? He always called me young fella. When he called me Clarence, I knew I was in trouble. Then Clarence says, well, what does that have to do with it? Everything, Bob said. Well, I guess I do. Guess nothing. Either you do or you don't. Yes, I do. That's fine, Bob replied. Now we're getting somewhere. All right, get out of bed and on your knees. We're going to pray. I don't know how to pray. I guess you don't, but that's all right. Just follow what I say, and that will do for now. I did what I was ordered to do, Clarence said. There was no suggestion. Dr. Bob was always positive about his faith, Clarence said. If someone asked him a question about the program, his usual response was, well, what does it say in the good book, in the Bible? Suppose he was asked, what's all this first things first about? Dr. Bob would be ready with an appropriate quotation. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. You need to read this book. You need to see what they were doing during the first 4 years. You really need to see that. You don't have to do it, but you need to see that. So when you are in an AA meeting and you read the words or hear the words being read, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Embedded in your mind, whether you're doing it or not, you understand what they were talking about, what their path was. Because if you don't really understand what they were doing and the intensity they brought to it and the seriousness they brought to it and the, if you want to call it fanaticism or zealousness or the lengths they went to do this thing, if you don't understand that, then you'll never understand why down the road it doesn't seem to be working for you, why it was working for them. You'll never be able to put that together because they're talking Greek and you're talking Portuguese. You need to read this and see what it is in order for you to even understand the language they were talking about. And this is just talking about 12-stepping and things like that. The next thing I want to read is, this is in our big book. Page 161. But life among Alcoholics Anonymous is more than attending gatherings and visiting. Okay, first of all, here's a question. Is everybody welcome in AA?
Yes.
Is there, what's, is everybody welcome in AA? Is every alcoholic welcome in AA?
Yes.
No. See, you guys obviously haven't read the book Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not true. First of all, I want to explain something to you. It may not seem like much. It may not seem like much. But we actually have a requirement for membership in here. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. Now, it may not seem like much, and the reason why it doesn't seem like much is until you get to a meeting, you need to hang around with people that actually go to meetings that don't want to stop. When you start hanging around with people that don't want to stop, don't really want to stop, but they're here for whatever reason, for every other reason, then you'll understand why we have a requirement of membership. But the big book says the following. It says, but life among Alcoholics Anonymous is more than attending gatherings and visiting hospitals, cleaning up old scrapes, helping to settle family differences, explaining the disinherited son to his irate parents, lending money and securing jobs for each other. When justified, these are everyday occurrences. Now listen to this. No one is too discredited or is sunk too low to be welcomed, to be welcomed cordially if he means business. If he means business. This isn't for people who need it. It's for people who want it. And the reason I say this to you is and you're going to have to learn this your own way. Because you want to know what I've learned? You know, remember I always talk about experience. My sponsor said when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk with the experience. No matter what I say, it's going to be no substitute for your working 10, 20, or 30 years trying to get people sober that don't want to get sober. So I guess you need to waste about 23,000 hours of your time of worry and fretting and sucking your thumb trying to get somebody sober who really isn't interested before you reach the conclusion that they reach in here. And you're just going to have to do it on your own. Chasing after people that don't want this thing and doing that kind of deal. When there are people dying out there that are really hungry for this thing. And what you ultimately realize is that what this thing is for is for people that really want it. You don't have to chase people around. If you look at in the story, the next thing I want to show you, which will make that a little bit better, more apparent, is in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, that's Bill Dalton. Bill Dotson. I want to read his, how they 12-step Bill Dotson. This is in our big book. Bill Dotson was the man on the bed. Has anybody ever seen the picture? Do they have it here, the man on the bed? In most A rooms, they have a picture of the man on the bed. There's two guys. There's Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. Bill Wilson, I think, has a Bible in his hand. And then there's this scrawny little guy sitting on the bed. That's supposed to be Bob. They have it in Little River. They have it all. That's supposed to be Dotson, Bill Dotson, okay? And so he's sitting on the bed, and they're talking to him. And this is what they wrote down in the book. This is how they 12-stepped them. After a while, Bill Wilson said, well, now you've been talking a good long time. Let me talk a minute or two. So in other words, Bill says to the guy, you know, the guy's yapping. You know, the guy says, okay, listen, you've been talking for like the last hour and a half. Let me say something. You know what the next line is? So after hearing some more of my story, in other words, the guy wouldn't stop, you know. He turned around and said to Dr. Bob, I don't think he knew I heard him, but I did. He said, well, I believe he's worth saving and worth working on. They then said to me, now I want you to listen to this. Do you want to quit drinking? What a question. What a concept, you know? Do you want to quit drinking? You know, it's like a showstopper. You know, I one of the things that I did, my sponsor did, and I might as well add it in right now, is I did Relay. I think I might have told you guys this, for 8 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I tell you something. I got involved in a lot of service. I'm not bragging. I'm just reporting. And I want to tell you something. 90% of the stuff that I ever did in Alcoholics Anonymous, I started out doing it because somebody either forced me, cajoled me, or told me I should do it. It was never my idea, okay? My sponsor would say, I think you ought to make coffee. I think you ought to do this. I think you ought to do that. Next thing I knew, I had the job. If you know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, once you have the job, you never lose the job. Nobody's ever coming up to you saying, let me have that job. You know what I mean? If you're making coffee for the group, you're there for the next 40 years. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to say, let me, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, you're going to be doing that thing. I was working every Friday night from 11 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock in the morning. If you called up Alcoholics Anonymous, you got me. Which meant, you know, now some nights I'd go to bed at 11, wake up at 8, and nothing. And some nights the phone rang, you know, because what happened was they call when they're ready, they call when they're not ready, they call when they're lonely, they call when they got nothing else to do. They're calling for a dating line. They're calling for whatever, you know what I mean? They're calling Alcoholics Anonymous. And, of course, you know, I believed, you know, like everybody believed, and I did this when I was young. I can't remember whether I had 5 or 6 years. You know, and I, you know, whenever the hand of AA, any alcoholic reach out, I have to personally be there, you know, and I'm responsible for your sobriety. And you learn a lot about, you learn a lot about working with alcoholics and who's ready and who's not ready and wasting time. And I can't tell you the hours I used to spend on the phone from 11 o'clock at night till 2 o'clock in the morning speaking to the same gal or same guy about their life, about their problems, about this. And then finally, after 3 hours of talking, I'd say, well, about this drinking thing. And they'd say, well, what do you mean? He said, well, the drinking thing. He said, well, what about it? He says, about stopping drinking. He says, I don't want to stop drinking. You know, I'd say, well, and then they'd say, well, why did you, they'd say, why did you call me? I says, well, you called us. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. You know, every once in a while in the middle of, after the first hour of talking, they'd say, could you hold on for a second? Can you give me a moment? I'd say, yeah. And I'd hear clink, clink. You know, they were putting the ice in the... Not only did that like that for about 5 years before I realized, then finally after 5 years, because I'm not stupid, after about 5 years of losing nights of sleep, I would say things like this. I'd get on the phone, and in the first 2 minutes, I'd say, let me ask something. Do you want to stop drinking? And you want to know something? If the answer was yes, the conversation went great. And the answer was no, it was a very, very short conversation. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's for people who want to stop drinking. It's not for anything else. We're not a taxi cab company. We're not a cab company. That's what the deal is. Well, I believe he's worth saving and working on. They said to me, do you want to quit drinking? It's none of our business about your drinking. Now, I want you to listen to this line. This is so great, this attitude. I want you to listen to this attitude. It's none of our business about your drinking. We're not up here trying to take any of your rights or privileges away from you, but we have a program whereby we think we can stay sober. Part of that program is that we take it to someone else who needs it and wants it. We take it to somebody else, somebody who needs it and wants it. Now, if you don't want it, now listen to this, if you don't want it, we'll not take up any more of your time, and we'll be going and looking for someone else. And quite frankly, I think they were saying, if you don't want it, we'll not be wasting any more of our time, and we'll be going and looking for somebody else. And that was their attitude. They were out there to save the lives of people that needed this and wanted this, and they didn't want to waste time working with people that still wanted to drink and weren't ready for this deal. I'm just reading from the book, the stuff in the book, and it's taken me many, many years to understand that my job is to expose this program to other people, let them know it exists through either testimony or talking to them, and then the bottom line is, if they're not interested, move on. Move on. You can waste a lot of time trying to beg people to save their lives. You know, everybody has to drink their last drink. Don't rob an alcoholic of his desperation. You know, that's my theory, you know, on these things. And, you know, I've sponsored quite a few people. Now, different people do it different ways. This is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door, you know. And I'm a rebuker, and I'm a no-nonsense guy. That's the way I was brought up. I'm blunt. I'm to the point, you know. I hurt people's feelings. I hurt my sponsee's feelings. You know, if they're around, if there's any around here, they'll tell you that. You know, I'm straight to the point. And that's the way my sponsors were with me. Now, I'm not saying everybody needs that or that's the deal with everybody. But you know something? The people that want this thing will not be chased out the door. You know, and the people that don't want it are leaving anyway. You know, that's the bottom line. Now, I'm not going to read anything else. I'm going to just sort of talk a little bit about... There were a couple of other things, but I just want to talk about how I got involved in 12-step work or whatever work you want to talk about. Actually, it's the greatest thing in the world. It's such a blast. I I don't know what it is. When I first came down, listen, first of all, I don't take any credit for anything that's going on with me in my life. I give all credit to God. It has nothing to do with being bright. Believe me, I've met people, you know, where the smarts can keep you away from the truth. You'd be surprised how your intelligence can keep you drunk and miserable. And I had to get real stupid, and I had to actually follow a guy around who had like a sixth grade education when I had all these doctorates on the wall, and listen to him, and I was willing to do that. And I don't even know where that kind of humility or whatever the heck it is, I don't even want to call it humility, I don't even know where that came from. You know, to me it's a God thing. Because, you know, because I've never been that way in my life. I'm a typical alcoholic. I'm defiant. I'm a know-it-all. I think I'm smarter than everybody else. I don't want to listen to anybody. And the bottom line, how would it happen that I shut up and sit still and listen to these guys tell me what to do? I have no clue. I'm sure it had something to do with getting to the jumping off place and being desperate and being scared of dying and wanting to live. Whatever it had to do with, it's a gift. To me, it's a gift. And some people get it and some people don't get it. And that's just the way it is. And I remember the first time and it was early on in my sobriety, I found myself in a situation where I had a sponsor who was very big on service. My first sponsor, I've had three sponsors. Bob Sullivan was my first sponsor, and he died of cancer, sober. And then Joe Snyder was my sponsor for many years. He died with 35 years or 36 years of cancer, too. Both these guys, I was literally just about at their bedside, you know, they were wonderful, wonderful men. And now my sponsor is a guy named John Glenn, who's got like 57 years. But, you know, they were very, all my sponsors have been incredibly involved in service, unbelievably involved in service. And the funny thing is the men they hung out with were exactly like them. They only knew one way of doing AA. Pedal to the metal, 150%. Their life was AA. Their life, you know, when I read this book about Bill Dalton, when I read about Clarence Snyder, when I read about, you know, Bill Wilson, when I read about Dr. Bob Smith, when I read about the founders, the people that are looked up to in AA, when I look and see, we got a lot of people in AA. And we don't put people on pedestals, but we do. Not so much a pedestal like, you know, he's a god or he's great, but people around here, after a while, there's a separation point, and there are people that attract people. This is a program of attraction, not promotion. If you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. There is no question there were men, AA daddies, and people in this program that I looked up to, and I said, I wish I could be like Bob. I wish I could be like Joe. I wish I could have what he had. And there were people in here I didn't want anything to do with anything they had. You know, and that's just the way it is. And these people, AA was their entire life. This program was their entire life. You know, they were not dilettantes. They were not just hanging around here so they could get the girl or get the guy or get, you know, the car or get the job. They were focused like a laser beam on Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's with 30 years or 25 years sobriety. That's not focused on it like a laser beam because you got 30 days or 3 weeks. These guys were focused on this thing. This wasn't like a meeting once in a while or three meetings a week. This was like every night. Maybe sometimes more than one meeting. You know, this was sponsoring a lot of people. Their whole life was in Alcoholics Anonymous and doing this thing and reading this book. They took this thing seriously. They meant business. They were like these guys. If you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and you see the intensity and how they faced, they were like those guys. And those were the guys I fell in with. And I don't know why I fell in with them. I felt, you know, I believe it was a God thing. I was just attracted to these guys. I'm absolutely sure if I didn't hang out with these guys, I really believe that the person you'll be 5 years from now depends on the person, people you hang out with, and the books you read. And without question, the books I read depend upon the people I hung out with. And what my activities were depend upon these men. And I found myself, and you know, alcoholics are followers. We're not leaders. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was in a country western bar, I drank beer. When I was in, you know, Key West, I drank margaritas. And when I was in New York, I drank, like, scotch or, you know, whiskey sour. I never got them mixed up. I never went to a country western bar and said, give me a whiskey sour. You know, I mean, I was always, if I was at a party, they were using cocaine, I was using cocaine. If they were smoking dope, I was smoking. I was going to do whatever you were doing in order to blend in. So that same thing that almost killed me on the outside saved my life on the inside. Because I remember one time, my sponsor, Joe Snyder, God bless me, died of emphysema. He was smoking. He'd have a pack of Lucky Strikes in this pocket, and he'd have another pocket with a pack of Pall Malls. And he was sponsoring me and another guy. And within a couple of weeks, we got a shirt with two pockets. And, you know, we were doing the same thing he was doing. You know, we were doing whatever my sponsor was doing, we were doing. We were doing whatever those guys were doing. And when we went out to AA, when we went out, it was like the whole night. We'd go out for dinner, like I do it now. And then we'd go to an AA meeting, and then we'd go for coffee afterwards. And we were, and this was our whole deal. And I found myself early on, not even know how to, and my sponsor would always get me involved in service and doing stuff. And, you know, I'm not an extra credit kind of guy. You know, I know there are people in here, I'm not putting you down. I'm just telling you the truth. I know that the majority of people, if not a large majority of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, don't drink and go to meetings. That's what they do. They don't drink and go to meetings. I mean, they've heard so much, just don't drink and go to meetings, that they think, just don't drink and go to meetings. Now, I'm not telling you to not to don't drink and go to meetings, but I mean, that's like the ante in the pub. That's the smallest thing you can do. They did so much more than not drinking and go to meetings. And I remember about 3 or 4 weeks, and my sponsor, we used to go on 12-step calls. He'd say, get in the car. We'd go to some guy's house, he was drinking. We'd go on a 12-step call. We'd take people to detox. We'd do stuff like that. You know, and I remember one time I was around 4 weeks or 5 weeks, 6 weeks sober, and it was a Saturday, and I was going crazy. And I was going crazy because, you know why I was going crazy? Because I was breathing. That ever happened to you? You're breathing, so you're crazy. I mean, you know, it was a Saturday. I had some sort of obsessive, compulsive, crazy thought. I had some sort of fear rattling around in my mind. You know how that works. You got a fear. Maybe it has to do with money, or maybe it has to do with a gal or a girl or a guy or a this or a that or a job or you know, whatever it is. Something was going to happen to me, and it was going to be bad. It was going to be terrible. It was going to be the end of my life. And, you know, when you have one of those things rattling around in your mind, it always hits another thing out. It knocks another thing out of place, and then you got two things running around. And the next thing you know, you got about 17 things running around. You got 17 things that you know that are going to kill you, and there's nothing you can do about it except think harder about how you're going to stop these 17 things from killing you. And, you know, and the more you think, then all of a sudden they start multiplying again. And, you know, and you can't tell anybody about it because they're stupid and they wouldn't understand and you're unique. And how can you explain it? You don't even understand it yourself when you know you're going to die and life is over. And, you know, and that's like about 6 weeks sober. That's what's going on when you're going to a lot of meetings even. And I don't know what happened. But somehow, some way, I found myself driving 6, 7, 8 miles, I don't know where it was, down to detox, because I had been there for months without my sponsor. I walked into detox, and at that time you could do this. I don't even know whether you can do it anymore. And at detox, they'd have all these guys and the gals, and they're in there, there's, you know, these gowns. You understand what I'm saying? And they'd have an AA meeting on a Saturday morning at like 9 o'clock, and I was the only outside alky there, you know? I mean, nobody was there on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, and so I chaired the meeting. And so I'm sitting there, and there's all these guys, like my age, maybe a little bit older, maybe a little bit younger, in these gowns. And I started just chairing the meeting and went around the room, and these people were, you know, like low-bottom drunks. And after the meeting was, I don't know what the heck I had been thinking about before that meeting, but after that meeting, I walked out. I was walking on air. I felt like I was walking on air. It was a great, I said, this, it was like I was on drugs. And I said, this is unbelievable. All I did was go in there, try to help these people. I was walking on air. And I started realizing that somehow, some way, when I went out and helped other people, it was some sort of, had some sort of like drug effect on me or something like that. It was unbelievable. And my sponsor had me do just so much, you know, the whole service bed, whether it was making coffee, being secretary of the group, and, you know, intergroup chairman, you know, general, you know, the whole deal, you know, almost every job you could have in AA, you know, picking up cigarette butts, whatever it is, I was involved in that and sponsoring people and all that deal. And, you know, there's nothing better than, you know, and I'm a strong believer in sponsoring people quickly. I'm not one of these guys that, you know, my big, hey, listen, thank God that Bill Wilson didn't wait until he took the 12 steps to sponsor Dr. Bob, huh? Thank God he didn't wait until he had 10 years or something like that. You know, we'd all be drunk. I mean, the bottom line is, it says you just can't give away what you don't got. If somebody comes up to you and says, will you sponsor me? I know you know that you're a goof. I know you know that you're stupid. I know you know that you can never sponsor somebody. But let me explain something to you. They don't know that. Because they're crazier and dumber than you are. And they wouldn't come up to you. I want to give you a clue. They wouldn't come up to you and ask you to sponsor them unless you had something they wanted or liked. So as crazy and stupid as you think you are, they see something in you that's desirable. So, you know, I'm available. Somebody asks me, I say yes. I say, I mean, that's my position. Now, there may be people that, I see people with all sorts of rules for this, and I'm not putting that down. I don't want anybody to fire their sponsor. All these sorts of rules. You got to have this time, you got to do this, you got to do that. I don't see that. I see you intensely go out and try to help other people. You just can't give away what you don't have. And it's like the guys I sponsor, they say, well, yeah, I haven't gone through all the steps yet. I said, hey, listen, you can't give away what you don't have. That's all. You know, so what if he asked me something I don't know? You say, well, now this is what you say. Are you listening? You say this. You say, you know, I don't know the answer to that. Why don't we ask Russell? Can you say, why don't we ask this? Can you say, I don't know? Why don't we ask him? They say, yeah, I can do that. I say, there you go. So if the only thing you do is you take the guy and say, I don't know, why don't we ask him? You've done something for him. You understand what I'm saying? So you can be somebody's temporary sponsor. You can help somebody out. You can do that deal. And so that's sponsoring people is the greatest in the world. I've had a blast doing it. You learn a lot of stuff working with alcoholics. You know, you learn how serious, you don't realize how serious this disease is until you're working with other alcoholics, you know, until you've been hurt by them and you've experienced what it's like to. And I think I've shared a few things like about this. You know, I fall in love with a lot of men. You know, you know what I learned? I said, no matter how much I want them to stop drinking, they don't stop drinking just because I want them to. It doesn't matter how much I want them to stop. They don't stop because Russell really wants them to stop. They stop when they want to stop. And you're going to have your heart broken, but it's the greatest. There's something great about having your heart broken that way. And you're going to learn a lot. And I remember so many things that, you know, I remember one time driving with my sponsor. This was Bob Sullivan. And we had a guy named Bobby, and I learned some. And Bobby was—I picked up a white chip I never drank again. Not bragging; it's just the way it is. You know, I like to say that because I want people to know that you don't have slipping is not obligatory. You know what I mean? It's not you know, we welcome people back. Yeah, we welcome people back, but we don't applaud slipping. You know, you don't have to slip. You know, you don't have. And you want to know something? I was told that you may not make it back, and a lot of people don't make it back. They make it back for a time, then they, you know, it's a tough deal. But Bobby was a slipper. Every 90 days, he would say, I'm really going to do it, I'm really going to do it. And then 90 days, it was like on the dot. It was like, you ever have people in AA say, I'm coming on that time? They had like a timer. It's almost like a countdown. I always drink on the 90th day. It's like they're talking themselves into it, you know what I mean? And Bobby was one of those guys. My sponsor would work with him, and then after 90 days, he would slip, and then work with him, and 90 days, he would slip, and we'd drive up to Bark, and we'd pick him up, and Bobby would buy him a new suit of clothes or something like that, and give him a job, and take him to AA meetings, and he'd be good for 90 days, and then he'd slip again, he'd disappear again. So I'm driving in the car, and I'm watching all this, because I was stark raving sober, and I was immediately, my sponsor only had about 17, 18 years. So he wasn't that bright. He didn't know what was going on. He didn't know that this guy was taking advantage of him. You understand what I'm saying? But I was watching how this phony baloney was taking advantage of my sponsor, how he wasn't serious. So we're driving up to pick up Bobby, and I'm telling my sponsor, and I had the speech already, okay? I had it on 3x5 cards. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I had wall posters, you know, I had glossy photos, I had charts. I said, you got to turn this car around. This guy is a phony. He's just screwing around with you. He's just wasting your time. And then I went through the whole deal. He says he did this in March. He did this in April. He did this in May. He's done this 5 times. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about anybody. He just cares about himself. You know, he's a liar. You can't believe a word he says. You shouldn't even waste any money on you. All he cares about is himself. He's just going to hurt you. He doesn't, you know, blah, 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 blah. Over and over. You know, a typical alky, you know, speech. You know, I repeated myself 17 times. Got myself, and I was working myself. I was my own mob. You know, I was working myself up to a lynching, you know, and let's turn this car around. And you want to know something? I was brilliant. I had facts. You know what I mean? I had all these facts and figures. I was logical. I mean, I had clearly won the argument. My poor sponsor, he didn't even graduate as a used car salesman. How could he even hold up with it? I was waiting. What could he say? I was so right. And I was so, I got so upset. And he said, and then I finally sort of stopped talking. And he looked at me and he said, are you done? And I said, of course, I wasn't really done. I was now having the conversation with the group in my mind. You know what I mean? Because there was a mob in my mind, and I had to talk to them, too. And I was having the same conversation with them. I'm sure you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. But, you know, I had to calm down the group in my mind first before I was, you know. And I said, he says, no, I mean it. Are you done? And I said, yeah, yeah. He says, you sure? And he says, yeah. And he said, listen to me, Russell. Says it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. It doesn't bother me like it bothers you. And I'm thinking, how the hell could it not bother me? How could it not bother you? Everything bothers me. And you know what the only problem was? I wanted everything he had. He wanted nothing I had. He wanted nothing I had. Because I was so botherable by everybody, by everything. Got me crazy. And I sponsored a guy named Kevin, wonderful guy. He lived in my house for some time, and that's a whole other story. And he was just a wonderful guy. I fell in love. I loved Kevin. He finally, after many years, got sober. He's dead now. God bless him. And Kevin had a problem with gals, a gal thing. Every once in a while in here, you run in, there's a gal problem. You know that second part, you know, where it says, B, no human power could have relieved your alcoholism. Only God could and would if he was sought. Well, there's a lot of people that think that they can either manage their lives in such a way so they don't have to work, so that alcoholism won't touch them. In other words, they can manage their lives so perfectly and control their lives so perfectly that it'll be a cure for alcoholism. Now, they don't understand that that's what they're doing, but that's what they do, okay? And it doesn't work. And there are other people that say, where it says no human power could relieve their alcoholism, in the back of their mind, they're convinced that if they had the right romantic partner, that would do away with their alcoholism. You understand? And if you don't understand that that's the truism, you need to, you know, just for the heck of it, go to one of these bars on a Friday night, you know, when it's ladies' night or something. Because that's what the whole thing is. If I only find her, I'd be okay. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that will never make it in here because they honestly believe that their God, their understanding is some woman. Or, you know, now, I believe, I can't prove this because I don't go to ladies' meetings. I believe that women maybe have a similar sort of deal. Sometimes, but Kevin had this deal, and somehow, whenever he would link up romantically with a woman, at the end of it, cops would get involved and he'd get drunk. I don't understand how that worked, but and I loved the guy. I really loved the guy. He went to a lot of meetings and he did a lot of stuff. And I, you know, two stories about Kevin. One gal, he met a gal named Annie in Tampa. He met her in a treatment center. He met her in treatment. You understand what I'm saying? Well, you know, he understood that this was a perfect arrangement because at least they had something in common. They were both sick. Same kind of sickness. You know what I mean? Well, don't you get it? I mean, we have so much in common. We're both crazy. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, isn't that true? Isn't that what happens? If you have a very bad driving record and you marry somebody else with a very bad driving record, don't they give you lower rates? Is this less chance of an accident or something like that? I don't know, but, you know, sometimes we think that way. We just, you know, so in any event, so we met this guy named Annie, and of course they kicked them both out of the treatment center, you know, after 9 days, because apparently you're not supposed to date while you're in treatment or something like that. And they were living together, and I came into Tampa with my wife, and there was over 90 days, and I called them up. We were supposed to have dinner that night, and it was 7 o'clock. I was at the restaurant, and he wasn't there. And that's always a dangerous sign when somebody's 9 days sober and they don't show up. And so I called up, and Kevin got on the phone. I said, Kevin, we're waiting at the restaurant. Where are you? And he says, Russell, I don't know what to do. I said, what? He says, Annie is at the top of the stairs. She's naked. She's got a bottle of vodka in one hand and a butcher knife in the other hand, and she's screaming at me to leave or she's going to kill me and kill herself. And I said, Kevin, I want you to listen to me very carefully. This is what I want you to do. He says, what? He says, leave. And he said, "You don't understand." Now, see, what happens is when you get past like a 10 or 15 year mark in Alcoholics Anonymous, you really do get dumber. You know what I mean? I was obviously not bright enough to understand the way things were the way Kevin understood the way things were. And I said, "No, Kevin, you need to leave." He says, "No, you don't understand. She's going to hurt herself." I said, "Kevin, what is she screaming at you?" He says, "She's screaming at me to leave." I said, "Kevin, leave. I can't." So that was the end of Kevin. He drank and the cops came and arrested him. You know, this is, so you need to start sponsoring people like this. You need to get involved in this stuff. You know what I mean? Have you ever read this thing, Working with Others, in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and what they say in Working with Others when they talk about how we're supposed to do this thing? It says right here, it says, let me see. See whether I can find this thing. Working with Others. Never avoid these responsibilities. It says right here. If I can only, okay, here it is. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You get that? This is what they're saying in the book. You want to know how do you want? A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean, now here's what it may mean. The loss of many nights sleep. The loss of many nights sleep. Great interference with your pleasures. Great interference with your pleasures. Interruptions of your business. Interruptions of your business. It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips, which I think means more than one, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day and night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor to administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. I mean, this is the stuff we were involved in. I'm not saying everybody has to do this exactly the same, but I'm telling you something. These guys were serious about this deal. And you know, they start off this chapter by saying, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with alcoholics. I've walked the halls of South Miami Hospital many, many times. You know, on Christmas Eve, on New Year's. Do you know how many times I sponsored people and just the least little suggestion has been met with, but I got to work, or I got to go to the office, or I got to go home, or I got to go, that they throw, and you know, alcoholics never throw things in your face like, they never throw up things like, well, I got to go to a beer party. They never say, well, I got to go drinking. It's always something that sounds so American and apple pie. I got to be with my kids. I got to be with this. I got to be with that. And you know, I'm just going to tell you about my life. You know, I got 4 kids and 6 grandkids. And I have no idea how this happened. I've spent most of the focus of my life and most of the time of my life working with other alcoholics, going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, focused on this deal in church. Probably to the detriment, time-wise, of my children and my wife. I'm telling you this right now. I mean, that's the truth. I plead guilty to that. It's probably true. You know, where other guys were at different functions, and I don't want you to make you feel like I went to a lot of functions for my kids and my wife, you know, and I was a father, and I'm a husband, I'm a grandfather. But I am absolutely sure that the weight of my time and energy has gone to Alcoholics Anonymous, working with alcoholics, doing this kind of stuff, this kind of deal. And you know, here's the weirdest thing in the world, and I don't understand it. You can explain it to me. I'm 62 years old. My girls, who are all grown up now, and my son, who's all grown up, they respect me, they love me, they care about me, they come to all the birthday parties, they're excited for me, and they love me. And you want to know something? All they've been doing is watching me. You know, all they've been doing is watching me. You know, kids like, my kids didn't want a friend. They wanted a father. They wanted to know they had somebody who was steady. That no matter what happened in their lives, what was going on, they knew that they had somebody in their life that was always going to be there. And they knew exactly what I was doing and how I was doing it. And you want to know something? The funny thing is, even as my wife was complaining about my helping alcoholics and doing there, she was complaining in such a way, she would complain in such a way that I knew she was proud of me. because I knew she knew I was focused. I was a man of integrity. I didn't say one thing and then do another thing. I didn't talk out. My sponsor said you could talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? I didn't talk a whole lot of AA and then hang out at the baseball games and all this other stuff, you know, and not put any effort into it. I didn't do that deal. I focused on Alcoholics Anonymous. And even today, you know, with 31 years, you know, and I'm not bragging. I mean, it's not a long time. My sponsor's got 57. I'm quite sure I go to more AA meetings and church and all this that we were talking about the other day. I don't even think about it. It's just my life. This is just my life. You know, I'm here. And tomorrow, you know, what's tomorrow? Friday night, I'll be at the Alive Again meeting. You know, and Saturday, I'll be over at the Carl Springs doing that. My wife will come up with me because, you know, my kids and my wife have now, I'm the leader. They follow me now. They go to meetings with me now. They go out to dinner with me now. Hang out with them. This has become part of their life now. My wife is, you know, I've told you, she's, you know, the queen of Al-Anon now. Our ladies of perpetual revenge. Yeah. Right? You know, she knows how to do an Al-Anon 10-step. When I'm wrong, she probably admits it. You know, I mean, the bottom line is you know, I'm the husband, I'm the father. I always wanted to be. I'm the grandfather. You know, Sunday I'll be in church. Sunday morning, Sunday night I'll be in church. You know, Monday I'm going to be at Bible study. You know, Tuesday I'll be. Yeah, I mean, I'm involved. I mean. Every once in a while, I actually stay at home, but I'm talking. This is my. Is this something you don't have to do? You don't have to do any of this stuff. You don't have to do any of this stuff. You can focus on your job if you want to. You can focus on chasing guys or chasing gals or going to Broadway play. Do whatever you want to do. You know something? It's your life. It's your life. Do whatever you want to do. You know what? You know what the bottom line is? I'm not here to impose my life or my way of doing things or my sponsor ways of doing things on anybody. But I'll tell you something. It's my obligation to expose my life. I'm not scared to expose my life. At least you'll know when you walk out of here that there's one crazy, zealous, fanatical, crazy guy who spent his entire life focused on this stuff and the stuff I'm talking about. And I'm not perfect. I got all sorts of screw-ups and hang-ups and problems. And all that sort of stuff. Just call my wife. She'll tell you all about it. She's got a list at home. You know what I mean? But the bottom line is, you'll know there's at least one guy doing it this way. And is experiencing the joy of living. And the happiness that comes about this. And I can tell you one thing. And the only thing I'm going to tell you, I don't want to say, because it would be a lie. It would be untrue. It would be an exaggeration. That I don't give a whit about this world. I mean, I work just like you guys do. I got an office. You know, I got to feed my family. I got to make money. I got to go in. I'm not living in a cave. You know, it is possible to focus your life on God, on other people, on church, on Alcoholics Anonymous, and actually have a job and go to work and do other things. But I will tell you this. I know what it's like living your entire life chasing the dream. Chasing the new car, chasing the new girl, chasing the new job, chasing the more money, chasing all that, chasing the clothes, chasing whatever you're chasing that you know, the new hairstyle, whatever it is that's going to make you happy. The new vacation, the next vacation. I know what it's like to chase all that stuff that you need to have that's on the billboards that you know will make you happy. And I can tell you something, it has never worked for me. But I have, notwithstanding the fact that it's never worked for me, like a true alcoholic, you know, you do the same thing over and over again expecting yourself, I have never been able to stop chasing it. If you put the alcohol aside, I am addicted to the way of life that most people are addicted to out there. Home to work, home to work, home to work, to make some bucks, to run around to chase stuff that isn't even making them happy anyway. And to the extent that I focused on helping people here and working with people here, and doing the stuff that God, I believe, you know, that's what it says. Our job is to be of maximum service to God and to other people. To the extent that's happened, I can tell you this. The things of this world have faded into the background. You know, I don't think about them a lot anymore. If I lose them, it's not that big a deal. If I get them, you want something? If I get them, it ain't that big a deal either. You understand? And I cannot tell you the freedom there is in not being addicted to this world. I can't explain to you the freedom there is in not being addicted to what they are addicted to out there. And I'm going to close up by reading one thing. And this is a story I like to read a lot. I've probably read it before. But, you know, I read this thing. And it's on page, nope, it's on page 266. It's one of the stories. You know, it's one of these things. You ever hear somebody talk in AA and they're saying something that's sort of like hitting you in your soul? It's like, you know, it's just something says something. He says, whoa. And this is, I want to read this last few paragraphs of this guy's story and then close up. It says, this is called the story, he sold himself short. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. And that life, if you want to, is available. That is available to every person in this room. Not only freedom from drinking, that life is available to every person in this room if you want it. Thank you very much. All right.